CFYLP is sponsored by CapturedPrey.com. Visit CapturedPrey.com today for all your import and third-party Transformers needs, and save even more through the Captured Prey Loyalty Program. You can also save on shipping on domestic orders of $150 or more. See website for details. CapturedPrey.com. Great toys, great prices, great service.
In a cold, faraway world, a battle is raging between evil and good. From the stones.
Perceptia here. Welcome to Transformers for your listening pleasure. TFYLP for short. Join us and discuss the latest in Transformers fandom. Now, where did I put that chorus stop?
Ratchet, will you take the chorus stop?
Transformers! Defenders of truth! Robots who fight in disguise!
Hello, everyone, and welcome to TFYLP, Transformers for your listening pleasure, episode number 296. Recorded August 11th, 2018. I am your host, Daron Land, a.k.a. Weird Wolf. Along with me this evening is Lucas Bockelman. I think your mic's still muted.
Hi, how's it going?
There we go. Peter Chavez.
Hello.
And Anna Pope. Your mute mic.
Yep, I did the same thing. Muting. After him.
That's live for you. As you can see, we've got some new faces on the show. Lucas and Peter, you guys are new to the show and going to be regulars. Anna is our special guest this evening, going to be talking about some things. I know if you attended TF Expo in Kansas City a few weeks ago, then you probably heard a little bit about this panel, about the death of Optimus Prime and how it affects us. We'll be talking a little bit about that along those lines. And I think it's going to be a very interesting episode, a little different than a little different topic than we typically cover. I mean, it's not all about the toys. I mean, you know, sometimes it's the cartoons, the comics, whatever. This is a varied franchise that we're a fan of. But before we begin, I'm going to give the opportunity for the new members to introduce themselves, get a little bit of background about how they became a fan, what kind of fan they are, what you know, what their favorites are, and a little bit about like that. And I'm going to start with Peter. Want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Putting me on the spot.
Yeah.
Hi. My name is Peter Chavez. I've been collecting forever, for as long as I can remember. I got my first Transformer back in 84. I have a picture of me opening Jazz at Christmas. I carried it all the way through, you know, Action Masters and all that fun stuff. Around Action Masters is when I stopped opening toys for the most part, just kind of kept all the packaging. And, you know, I'm 12 years old, 10 years old, keeping all my packaging, keeping everything, bought everything I could through my teens, 20s, and never quit. And then third-party stuff started showing up, and yeah, like all I have in my
house
right
now. It's a snowball that just keeps on getting bigger.
It rolls right down the hill, yeah, and just takes over everything. So yeah, I have a lot of stuff in storage. I worship the bin god, hashtag bin life. And but yeah, buy everything I can, absorb everything I can, and torture my family with regurgitating what I know and what I have and what I do.
I kind of relate to the you know, taking care of your toys when you get them and keeping the boxes. I was very much the same way whenever I was little. And Jazz was probably my seventh or eighth Transformer I ever got. And I remember whenever I was done playing with them, I'd put them back in the bubble, back in the box, and put them on the shelf. That's the way I always put them. And
yeah, take care of them.
We lived in Eastern Kentucky at the time, and I had a heart disease, and so we had to move to a warmer climate. So we wound up moving to South Florida. And right before the move, my mom's like, those things take up way too much space. Because we moved from this big house that we lived in to a single-wide trailer. And I lived, my bedroom was a cracker box compared to the room that I had in Eastern Kentucky. And, I wanted to flatten all the boxes, and she said no. So I cut out all the box art, and I've got this big album now that's got like all box art, tech specs, the robot points. I still have all the robot points and everything from all my original collection. It's crazy. And then I did
singing my song.
I did the Bin Life whenever I finally came back to Transformers in probably mid 99, I guess. And I got back to collecting. From there, I had, you know, Beast Wars, Fox Kids repaints all the way through the second universe. And I had both loose and sealed of everything, included store exclusives. I had like 18 bins in this studio apartment stacked floor to ceiling. It was like, I can't enjoy these things. So, yeah, I ended the bin life. I ended the bin life, but I can totally relate. Lucas, you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I'm Lucas Bockelman, and I've been collecting Transformers forever when I was a kid. We ended up selling all of my Transformers in a garage sale, so I don't actually have any of my originals. But then around 2006, when the classics came out, I had no idea what they were because, you know, the internet wasn't what it was now. And so I went to the shelf at Walmart and I was like, oh my God, like what is this? I can't believe that they're bringing back Transformers.
They never went away. Cool.
So I bought them all. For me, you know, when I was in college and high school and all that, I kind of had other things I was focusing on.
Girls.
But then I got back into it. Right. And then now, so I have a 7-year-old and a 4-year-old. And so when my kids were originally born, I kind of started getting more into toys and collecting and all that kind of stuff. And it was right around the time that Masterpiece really kind of started back up, like the Dodson Brothers and all those types of things. So I just kind of just slowly but surely started buying more and more. And then it just has kept on. And now I'm into third party. And now I'm into, you know, all the Hasbro stuff. And,
it usually starts with just one. And they're like, right. You know, he's got a friend. Oh, he's got a friend too. Oh, these are a set. I need to get the set. I need to get the set of sets.
Yeah, you gotta start. It branches out.
Yeah, it is a black hole that a lot of people love to get sucked into, it's for sure.
And so then it was kind of under control a little bit. I was doing the bin life. But then I asked my wife, I was like, hey, we have an extra room in the basement. Can I just have that for my collection? She said, sure. And so I went to IKEA, bought, you know, shelves, lined the room in it. And I was like, I'm never going to fill this up. And then now here I am, I filled it up and I had to get a booth at TF Expo, last week to, you know, kind of sell off things that actually make room for the new stuff coming out. So.
I'm already trying to look and see what I can take to TFCon USA. You know, it's probably going to be a box full of stuff, but still, I'm like, I'm probably looking at my TCC stuff and a few of the smattering of club exclusives that I've got, you know, and just, I don't know. I don't need it. I need room for more things. But you know, it's one of those things. You know, the size of the collection, it varies. I mean, the largest I had over 2,000 figures. I don't know the exact amount. I just know that it was over 2,000 because my first big sell-off in 2006. You know, I sent a list to BBTS, and they had a cash offer of, I want to say it was like 18,000. So, you know, if they offer you half of what it's worth, so you can kind of parlay that into how much I had. And it's just crazy. I didn't realize, and it just took from 99 to 2006 to amass that much. And I've shown a lot more restraint personally in recent years. You know, I don't, you know, I mean, I might go a couple weeks and buy one or two figures, and then I might go a month and not buy anything. It's hard, but when you have limited space like me, you know, it gets to the point, especially whenever there's you know, the main line has got so many great things coming out, it fills up quickly. You know, Power of the Primes, and now this new Siege for Cybertron, you know, or Cybertron Siege. It's just, there's just so much, and I'm going to have to be very picky and choosy coming up. You know, Peter, do you know about how many you have? Rough guess.
Not so much a rough guess as I use Schmax, the website.
Oh, so you know exactly what
I have. It's not 100% accurate in terms of, I haven't gone through everything and done a full inventory, but I try and keep up. So I'm right at around 3,800.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, it's quite a bit.
I mean, like I said, I was in a studio apartment. It's basically a bedroom and a kitchenette and a living room. And those were the two main rooms. And we had a bathroom, a small walk-in closet, and a small laundry room. There were Transformers in every room except the bathroom and the laundry room. And I mean, literally the kitchen had some on the top of the cabinet. It was crazy.
I've been there. Yeah.
We'd have friends come over and pizza delivery guys say it looked like a Toys R Us exploded in my apartment. I was fine with it. My ex was fine with it, you know, so there's nothing wrong, you know, with it. But like we've talked about before here on the show, your collection is what makes you happy. You can have a collection of 5 and you can have a collection of 5,000. You know, whatever floats your boat. You know, if you're happy with that collection of 5 and you're just a big fan of the franchise, you're just as much a fan as the rest of us. So,
it's just numbers at the end of the day.
Yeah. And some of us, we just can't hold back, you know, that plastic crack. So Anna, you want to tell us a little bit about yourself and welcome to TFYLP?
Sure. Yeah. You want me to talk about my background too? Or
sure.
You want me to absolutely. Just talk about why I'm here, quote unquote.
Give us your background and then you can
kind of. Sure. Kinda, yeah. Kinda, so, I'm the same as the rest of you. I grew up with the figures. I think I got my first figure in around 1985. I was 2, so I don't remember it very clearly, but I do still have it. It's a Headstrong, so he's Ooh. Still on my shelf, and he's got a lot of tooth marks on it, so it's pretty authentic that it was owned by a 2-year-old originally. He was definitely
a
teethy.
You're a youngin'.
A teethy rhinoceros, yes. I guess a little bit. But I got back into collecting in my teens because I didn't collect afterwards because I was still a kid, but in my teens, Beast Wars was coming out, then Beast Machines, and then Robots in Disguise in 2000 were the lines that I could first buy, you know, as a pseudo-adult where I had a little bit of money, and I started to buy all of them and put them on shelves. I started doing this thing that you all
the
are
disposable
showing.
Income finally arrives.
And I saved half of it and spent half of it on toys. So I had everything. It was pretty fun. And on second thought, I didn't actually like most of those figures. So when classics started coming out and the Generations figures, I got really excited because those were more of the style that I liked. And I started collecting all of those. And I just kept going since then for a few years. And gosh, until I moved here to Kansas, honestly, I claim to mostly be a Masterpiece collector, so I just bought the new Masterpiece figures and just a little teeny bit of third-party stuff every once in a while I'd try something. And I had really stepped away from Generations, even though I was really excited about having a bunch of Headmasters and stuff. But then I started to meet people here and realized that there was a little bit of a like community of Transformers collectors. And suddenly I've started buying, you know, pretty much everything from Generations, a bunch of third-party stuff, and still keeping up with my Masterpiece stuff as well. Yes, I live at the rabbit hole now. It's where I am and where I keep my stuff, I guess. As far as how many, if I had to count, I did count recently, and I had like a little over 300 on display. And I have a rule where if there's something that I'm not displaying anymore, I have to either figure out where I'm going to put it to display it, or I have to sell it because I just don't want to keep a lot of stuff. But I tend to try to spread mine out and make scenes and whatnot. So therefore, I fill up a room pretty well with just 300 and something figures. The thousands numbers that you all said, I feel like an amateur, but as you said, it's not really that big of a deal. No.
Well, it's like I said, I had over 2,000, and I picked out 100 of my absolute favorites, and that was really difficult. But I sold down to 100, and I've rebuilt to, I want to say, almost 300, had another sell-off, rebuilt to almost 500, had another sell-off, and now I'm probably close to, I'd say I'm over 500 again, just a rough guess. You know, there's been, you know, bouts of financially irresponsible, I admit that, you know. you know, it's like food or toy, food, toy. Yeah.
Rhonda's sheep, right? Mm-hmm.
But, you know, more recent years, I've either gotten to the point where I can sell a toy to buy a toy, or, you know, I've got a decent enough job now that, you know, after my bills are paid, you know, I have a couple $100 left over, you know, let's go splurge on something. You know, who needs to save? You know, we're all going to die broke anyway. You know, it's like, you know, it's just, you know, it's the ebb and flow of collecting, and that's what makes it fun. And everything. You're saying that your first Transformer was Headstrong. Is that correct?
Yeah. Randomly enough, I never finished the set ever.
Wow. Still haven't. Nope. All the gift sets that's been released and everything.
Never bought a gift set. Still haven't bought a third party one. Haven't bought the new one. Oh. Just keeping it at my one.
Power of the Primes, Predaking. A lot of people are mixed emotions on him, but I didn't care for him at first in the pictures. I thought he looked kind of bland, but now that I have him in hand, I really like him. The only big gripe I have is he doesn't have the spike knuckles, and he needs that big ass sword. He just needs that big ass sword. So that's the only reason I'm looking at that DNA Designs upgrade kit. But
I'm in the opposition. DNA's for that
figure. Do you have Feral Rex too, Jerome?
I do not. I did have the Tantrum in that, and I sold it in another one of my sell-offs. However, in my Stasis Pod at Captured Prey, I do have a Nero Rex. I just have not picked it up yet. So it's one of those, like, well, that's $500. I don't have $500 just laying around. So maybe it might be one of the things I'll buy if I sell enough stuff at TFCon. I don't know. So Peter, you said your first was Jazz, did you say?
Yeah, Jazz was my first, and then my parents, they got me a bunch of GoBots after that for a while, so, you know, not too fond of those, but they came and went, they were gone, and, stuck with Transformers. Yeah.
So.
Are we disparaging GoBots here?
Okay, now let me clarify. I have full sets now of Guardians and Renegades and the deluxe stuff and Puzzler and Monstrous, and yeah, we're good now, Rock Lords. But at the time,
I had a GoBot right here.
See, there's Scooter right there.
Yeah. She could judge.
So, no judgment. But as a child, I was in a different frame of mind, you know. So, I was really lucky as a kid. We were in the military. And we moved around a lot, so my mom would go to garage sales all the time and would buy up basically everything she would find. So I had Metroplex and Omega Supreme and all these, you know, really great toys that she paid nothing for because, you know, yard sales. So that kept me going through the 80s anyway.
Yeah, did you ever have the It's like I never got big toys myself until, you know, unless it was like a birthday, Christmas, special occasion. It's usually like a mini bot or a combiner limb. So, you know, it's like I completed very few combiners as a kid. You know, I had like all the surrounding cast, but didn't have the main bot, you know.
I was similar, yeah. I had a couple from each team. My first complete combiner was Piranacon. So I had a couple of Combaticons and a couple of Stunicons and a couple of Constructicons and a couple of Technobots. But I finally got all the C-cons, and that was my first. And that's why, well, he's kind of off frame, but yeah, I love Piranacon.
I'm partial to Devastator. You know, he was my very first complete combiner. Matter of fact, my very first Transformer was Bone Crusher. Whenever I was hospitalized with a heart disease when I was 10, and my next door neighbor, was a good friend of mine, and he was about 3 or 4 years younger than I. And he came to see me in the hospital, and he brought me my very first Transformer. I was really big in Masters of the Universe at the time. Mm-hmm. And this little bulldozer that turned into a robot that could combine with five other robots, little rubber dolls, what? You know, you know, it had me hooked, line, and, or I'm sorry, hook, Bone Crusher, and and Scrapper. So, yeah, it's a rabbit hole. Lucas, what's your very first?
The first one I had was Computron. So I had the limbs from him, and I was always really sad, you know, from the movie. And I know we're gonna, you know, kind of transition to that. That not just the fact that all those guys died, but that I could no longer get those toys. So when I went to the store, then, you know, because I was 6 when the movie came out. And so when I went to the store, there was Ultra Magnus and there was, you know, some of those ones, but I could never actually get Optimus Prime because they had already moved on to some of the new ones. So, yeah, so that was kind of the bummer for me. It's like I couldn't get a hold of some of those original toys.
Yeah, it's one of those things, like I remember – I think it was the Protectobots. I got Streetwise, and I want to say I had First Aid as a kid. I know I had Streetwise, but then by the time it got around to trying to get all of them to finish it, they weren't even on the shelf anymore. It was like 87, and that's whenever the Terracons and the Technobots were out. If you found a Protectobot or Stunticon, is it like those stores that had slow stock? And, you know, they might have had one or two of each, but not the rest of the group. And, you know, there was a lot of them I couldn't complete that way. But I did get Abominus and Computron. I think that's one of the reasons why I have a very close connection to those two combiners, is because they really were my first, outside of Devastator, my first combiner set. And then I got Predaking all at once for Christmas. And it was one of those Christmases that, you know, my mom and dad went all out for me because, you know, I had a heart disease. You know, they didn't know if I was going to be around for another year. So they went all out for me. And it makes it special. You know, you look at those characters, you know, even though Power of the Primes Predaking is not necessarily the originals, they invoke enough of the original characters that they resonate with me, and I feel a special connection with them. And I think that's what a lot of people, you know, whenever they look at the eras of Transformers, is like, I like Beast Wars. Me personally, I love Beast Wars. It's a great era, some great designs, great toys. You know, Megatron, Dinobot, they're great. I love the masterpieces, but I don't think I will ever actually get back on board with those, because it's not stuff that I resonate with. You know, it's not what I grew up with. What I resonate with is the Generation 1 characters. So it, you know, it's one of those things that, I'm kind of losing my way here. it's one of those things that you latch on. It's you know, we're called G1ers throughout the fandom. You know, people make fun of us. You know, it's like, why do you always keep going back to G1? Well, why do you like Beast Wars primarily? Why do you like Armada? That's what you grew up with. That was your childhood G1. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. It's just what resonates with you.
You never forget your first.
Exactly.
It sticks with you. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Anna, you want to tell us a little bit about what you do and why we have you on the show this evening?
Sure, I can talk about it. So I did see someone in the chat mention that this was going to be a repeat of my panel from the con, which isn't exactly what's going to happen, because it's going to be more of a conversation, and I'm going to go more on edge and say some more like, I'd say, philosophical ramblings that aren't as supported by the research here. So have a little more fun with the idea since we have longer to talk about it. But that being said, the topic that I talked about and the topic that I've been talking about has been the connections we have with these characters. And I'd really like to do some research on with the figures themselves, but I'll talk about that later. But specifically with the characters, because there's research showing that we do have what kind of substitutes for pseudo-social relationships with fictional characters from media. So I wanted to talk about that with Transformers, because I think that's a group that I have a few pseudo-social relationships with. A few might be an understatement by far, that I'm really attached to some of those characters. So that's what I came to talk about. Now, in my professional life, I'm a college professor. I'm a social psychologist. So I came in from an academic direction, reviewing kind of the social psychological research on these ideas. And I just came to talk to people about it who, you know, wouldn't normally be talking about these topics. I thought it would be fun. And I got really good reaction from the people in the room, at least to my face. So I thought I could talk to you all about it as well. And it would be fun to do so.
Well, there was some listeners that were of the show that were actually in attendance at TF Expo that really enjoyed the panel. They said it was fresh, new, and interesting. And whenever they it was mentioned that, you know, that you were talking about, like, the death of Optimus Prime and how it can affect us, and how and why it's okay. I'm like, you know, I never really thought about that, you know, and it did affect us as children. I didn't get, I was not fortunate enough to actually see the movie in theaters, because it was, you know, saw a limited release in 86, and I didn't get to see it probably until whenever it came out on video, maybe 1987 or so. And I got to see it then. And even then, wow, I knew that they had killed Optimus Prime because he wasn't in season 3, which had already started airing at that time. But just seeing it happen, I'm like, it tore me up inside. And, you know, Hasbro even listened, because, you know, Prime died in the movie. And then they had this little movie called G.I. Joe, the movie, getting ready to come out. They even changed the script in it so that Luke did not, Duke did not die. Luke, you are not my father. So it affects people. And whether or not you realize it, it does. It's one of those things. It's not just like the death of Optimus Prime. It's like characters, going back to what I was saying, how you resonate with characters, whether it be through, you know, video, visual media, like the movies and cartoons. It may be a comic book, or for me, like my personal favorite character, Weird Wolf, I resonate through his tech spec. You know, I read his tech spec and I'm like, you know, it kind of sounds like me. I relate to that. He talks to himself in a sing-song backward way. He's in his own little world. He is generally pretty smart, but everybody thinks he's just crazy. You know, he's good at what he does, but nobody really acknowledges it. I kind of see that. I see myself in that. You know, for many years, I would do things very well, whether it be in school or at work, and just never get acknowledged for it. Somebody else may take the credit for it. And I'm like, no, I was just never enough to actually speak up about it. But I think back to Weird Wolf and I'm like, I resonate with that. And then there's his headmaster, Monzo, who is an ex hyper wrestler, and I love pro wrestling. So, hey, you know, it's like a match made in heaven, and that's, so I resonate with Weird Wolf. So resonating with characters, how does that happen, and why does it happen?
Well, it happens because, kind of, for, let me start by saying how we connect with people in general is from the interactions we have with them, right? We start to make that kind of a part of ourselves, a part of our lives. We start to think of ourselves as a we instead of an I. So if I were to, like, do several shows with you all, I might start to think of us as a group. I might start to think of you as my friends. I might start to think of you as connected. I would get to know you. I'd expect certain social interactions, and I'd be able to have them kind of to my heart's content, right? Because you're all still alive. You're all still here. So I could have more conversations with you. If I wanted to talk to you, I could call you up or message you on Facebook or whatever. And cause that connection again. That connection not only satisfies what we call our need to belong, which is just that need that all humans have to have social interactions, but it can also kind of boost your self-esteem by having good personal relationships and make you feel good about yourself. Fictional characters can serve the same purpose. So they can kind of give us that same kind of social interaction, but the funny thing about it is that it's one way. So whereas I enjoy being Lucas's friend, and I'm imagining he enjoys being my friend, and we can both benefit from the relationship and have things to talk about and both complain about our space limitations and our display rooms and how much money we spend on Transformers, I may feel really connected to, say, Bumblebee from G1, not from the movies. Don't get those two confused. Never say that I'm connected to the movie Bumblebee, because I am not. This is a little repetitive from the panel. Exactly that. But I may be connected to him, but I've never talked to him. Right? I've never had a conversation with Bumblebee. Maybe I've talked to my toys, but I've never actually had a conversation with the man. He doesn't know me. He has no social interaction with me. He knows nothing about me and has no relationship with me, yet I have a relationship with him, right? I know about his personality. I know about his accomplishments. I know about what he wants to do, how he usually acts. I could predict in a new situation what he would do, and he has no idea what I would do in a new situation because he doesn't even know I exist. So that's what's weird about these relationships, is they do actually satisfy our need to have social interactions. They can, when you're really lonely, connecting with your favorite characters from media can actually make you feel better. But at the same time, it's not a real relationship, right? We call it a parasocial relationship because it's kind of like a parasite. You benefit and they don't, except you don't really hurt them. I mean, you're actually helping them since they're getting
famous. It's kind of like the remora of relationships. You know, a remora is the little fish that suction themselves to the bottom of sharks and everything, and they don't necessarily harm the shark, but they kind of assist the shark. You know, they eat little morsels of food that the shark, you know, doesn't eat, keep other parasites away, and everything. It's more of a one way relationship for them than it is the shark, but you know it. I can kind of see. Then there's also how we've heard of actors going to these conventions and fans coming up to them and actually treating them more so actual film actors over voice actors. Although I've heard of voice actors actually relating similar stories, but how people actually think that they are those characters. You know, it's like if you were to meet Richard Dean Anderson, and, you know, he is Colonel Jack O'Neill, not Richard Dean Anderson. You know, you think he's Jack O'Neill because that's who you saw on television for 15 years, you know, but he's actually Richard Dean Anderson. That's just the character he played. And there's always that social awkwardness that sometimes that they get at conventions and out on the street, you know, professional wrestlers. I know some professional wrestlers. They may be a bad guy in the ring, but they're actually pretty cool out on the street. But yet people see them out on the street and they're like, oh, I hate you, you know. You know, people actually want to beat them up because they think they're actually a bad person. So there's that. Peter, Lucas, have any comments or questions so far?
Actually, I do. I was a military brat, like I said earlier, and we moved around a lot as a kid. And for me, Transformers, that's kind of what it was for me, was as we moved around, I wasn't very social as a kid. I didn't make friends easily. So the Transformers were the characters themselves, whether, you know, cartoons that we had on my VHS copies or the toys or the comics, they were always there for me, not to sound too, you know, weird about it, but they're always there for me when I was, you know, moving around in a new environment, a new uncomfortable situation. They were always there to give me comfort.
Stable.
Exactly. They were a level of stability, something that I could always go back to and feel safe with. So.
Oh, and we lost Peter.
Mic drop.
He'll be back, I hope.
I think it's more of a Skype issue, probably. Because it was like immediately after that.
I was going to add, I know Paul and Greg at the show actually mentioned about the death of Optimus Prime, that Hasbro had no idea that it was, you know, it was going to have the impact, or even really the Transformers had, you know, the impact that they did on people. And the amount of fan mail that they got at Hasbro just stacks and stacks and stacks outside their offices. That they're like, oh, wow, okay, we actually do have an impact on these people. So, I mean, that's the thing, is I think that they didn't realize, I think, the impact just with G.I. Joe and with Transformers. And I think that's the reason you had mentioned about Duke, about them changing that on Duke, that I think that they probably figured, okay, yeah, what we did to Optimus Prime, we can't do this anymore.
Yeah. It's like he slipped into a coma. No, he got stabbed in the heart. It's like he's dead.
Stabbed in the heart, blood everywhere. It's not a good scene.
Yeah.
It was a light stab. It was a very light stab. No problem. But I wanted to comment on what Peter said, is that an interesting thing about relationships with media characters is not only can you take them with you, they can't reject you. Right. So like it can't go badly. So like I could piss Lucas off over something. I could like insult his favorite figure or something. And he could get mad at me. I hope we're not that fickle, but we'll see.
You'd be surprised in this fandom.
Right. And it's even like with my fiance, like I could make him mad and make him not want to talk to me for a while. But no matter how much of a jerk I am to just back to Bumblebee or Optimus or whatever character, they don't judge me. They don't care. I can sit here and talk about how Bumblebee actually wasn't that great of a character, and he didn't really accomplish that much, and he was only in this many episodes, and it wouldn't change my relationship with him at all. He wouldn't get mad at me. Whereas if I tell my fiance over there that he didn't have a big impact on me, he'd probably be pretty pissed that I said such a mean thing. Whereas the characters that we make relationships with actually don't care, because they don't know that we're saying these things. So things can't really go wrong. They're really reliable relationships.
Well, you know, and it's one thing too, you know, because, you know, we, especially with the Transformers, we develop these relationships with these characters as children. And now here we are 25, 30, 40 years later, and we still maintain that relationship. It exactly. sticks with us because, and it goes back to the stability thing. One of the reasons I got back into collecting as an adult is, I was probably early 20s whenever I got back into collecting. I always liked Transformers. I never stopped liking them. It's just one of those things, like Lucas said, I got to a certain age personally, and I kept all the ones that I had, just boxed them up and put them away, because, you know, I wanted to pursue other things. You know, I wanted to find a girl, and I wanted to experience other things. But then after I'd found a girl and gotten married and moved out on my own and gotten a job and bills and everything, that was around the time I got back into the hobby. And I started remembering Transformers, and I found, you know, I got my original toys back and started looking at them. And then I started remembering the characters and started remembering the relationship. And it took me back to a time when I didn't have the stress and worry that I had now. You know, I was at the time I first got into Transformers, I was a very sick little boy. I couldn't run and play like the other kids. I was stuck in the house to watch television and play with my toys. And I remember how happy they made me and how I connected with those characters and those toys. So I could come home from a long day at work or, you know, leave the room with an argument with my wife and go in there and sit down with my toys. And I'm like, you're not going to argue with me. You're not going to tell me I did a shitty job today. It gave me a sense of calm, a break from the world as it was. And it's because of those relationships that I developed, not just with the toys, but with the characters associated with those toys. So, you know, let's focus in on the death of Optimus Prime.
Sure.
You know, I guess people who went to the panel are probably going to know a little bit about what you said there. But I personally wasn't able to be there, so I would very much love to hear what you had to say in regards to that.
Yeah, I was kind of fishing people with the death of Optimus Prime because I only talked about it for a few minutes, but I'm happy to talk deeper into the death of Optimus Prime and of other characters. First, I want to say, though, that for media characters, there's multiple ways for them to die, because whereas, I mean, it's just like there's multiple ways for a relationship to end. So, you know, my relationship with my dog could end when he dies. It could end when I lose him. It could end when I give him to a family member because I could no longer have him in the house for one reason or another. Many different reasons. Media characters are kind of the same way, right? So our relationship with Optimus Prime could have ended when the show got canceled. In a lot of ways it did, since he kind of sort of came back and then we didn't get any more episodes after that. Or it could have ended when he died, which is what most people see it as being. And people tend to actually react to these deaths of media characters in the same way, regardless of if they die, or if they just stop existing, more or less, right? There's no more episodes with this character.
How many season one and two characters just disappeared after the movie? No explanation given.
Died terribly.
Yeah.
So there are multiple ways they can die, which is interesting. However, Optimus just straight died. So that was more of a normal death. And what's really interesting about these parasocial relationships is people literally mourn. Like, they actually do mourn for characters that die, because the relationships, at least on our side, remember it's a one-sided relationship, are real to us, and that relationship's over. So it's like, I can continue having new experiences with my friends or my mom and dad or whatever, but I can't have any new experiences with Optimus Prime because he's dead. He's gone. So that actually causes people to mourn and to feel really negative. And what I personally think's unique about that type of mourning is if one of you came in and said a close personal friend of you recently passed away, we could all relate to that really easily. Everybody would be like, oh, I understand. I'm happy to make you feel better. Do you want some comfort food? Do you just want to talk about it? However, if you walk into your place of work and you tell them, oh man, my favorite Transformer just died in the comics,
they'll laugh their ass off.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas the rest of us will probably be like, oh, I totally understand. I was totally bothered by whoever died this week's death as well. Other people aren't going to relate to that so well. So it is unique, because we do have the exact same, not exact same, I'm sorry. Let me say we have a slightly less reaction to deaths of fictional characters, and we get over it a little bit faster, significantly faster than we do with real people. But the type of reaction is the same. It's just not something that we can really talk to others about as frequently.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, like, you know, my coworkers know I'm a toy nerd. Some of them have even actually watched, you know, episodes of the podcast before. I'm not ashamed of it. But, you know, if I were to go to any of them, even the ones that's watched this show and understand, you know, what kind of fan and what kind of hobby I'm into, they don't relate to those characters, because they may know who Optimus Prime is. They may know. They may even know who Generation 1 Optimus Prime is, you know, the original Optimus Prime, the cab over. But they don't have that connection to that character, so it just doesn't feel. But yet, they could have a television show. Like, I know my girlfriend loves Sons of Anarchy. I never really resonated with that show. But yet, you know, I know there's characters that died on that show. They would impact her, but I'd be like, You know, and it's not dismissing her feeling on that, just as she would not be dismissing my feeling about, you know, a death of a Transformer character. It's just your perspective on said relationship. You know, you have a personal relationship with that character, whereas the other person may not. They don't even know who that character is. There's nothing wrong with that.
I had a few people bring up, and something that actually impacted me as well, is that some people who are growing up, you know, without, say, you don't have a great father figure in your life, right? I didn't really have a great father figure in my life. You can attach to a character in the media kind of as a father figure. Several people on the panel mentioned that for them, Optimus Prime was a little bit of a father figure because he was fatherly, right? He had some fatherly characteristics. He kind of felt like he took care of the younger, and by that I mean smaller, Transformers that were hanging out with him, and that he was someone you could look up to as a role model. He seemed to have some good moral character and those types of things. So when this guy's acting as your father figure and then he dies, that's a really strong impact. Then when you explain that to the other kids, since kids are pre-programmed to make fun of you for anything you say to them, they're not going to be super nice about it.
Yeah. And then he's replaced with a super moody dude that wishes he was still there too.
Isn't it funny how as adults, like, that's kind of a cool transition. I'm like, oh, it's fun. Now we have a leader that's super inexperienced and moody and complains about it all the time. And that's a good, like, literary device. But as kids, it sucked.
Yeah. You know, and I think I was actually one of the few in my circle of friends as a child that, we were into Transformers. And I was one of the few that actually liked Rodimus Prime. You know, I liked the Hot Rod Winnebago. And I didn't care that he was a bit moody. You know, we all get moody at times. I'm moody. What's wrong with that? You know, but yet, you know, you see now, a lot of adult fans looking back on Rodimus Prime, and he was just a whiny bitch, you know, and they don't like him. You know, he's not one of the most popular characters. And it's funny how even within the same fandom, we can have different views on the same character.
Absolutely. And we all do. Some people really like certain characters. You know, I've even heard people tell me as a kid, I super liked the Dinobots, right? Because every kid in the 80s was into dinosaurs. And therefore, they resonated with kids really well. But if you think about the way they were characterized from an adult perspective, seeing them for the first time, they're characterized in a very interesting way, that they're characterized as robots that were literally built to be stupid. Mm-hmm. Which is a strange thing to build. If you had the ability to bring life into existence and you literally chose for them to be stupid instead of intelligent, that would be a really strange choice.
Like, it reminds me of the Dr. Smoove video where he made fun of that very aspect. I don't know if you've seen it on YouTube. It's been out there for years. But just look up Dr. Smoove and... I want to say it's the his take on SOS Dinobots, and there's a scene in it where I think it's Huffer and a couple other characters are absolutely giving Wheeljack hell because he's like, "You made them stupid. Like, you could have made them as smart as the rest of them, but you made them stupid." It's hilarious.
It causes disconnect too, because like when I told my fiance that I wanted to collect all the masterpiece level Dinobots, which are extremely expensive, so I had to explain my rationalization for that, and I've still never bought them. I had to explain that I really liked them, they were really cool characters, and I had to expose him to how the characters were characterized on the show, and he just did not get it, because it's like, wow, they're like caveman caricatures from the 80s. Great.
But that makes him cool.
Utterly ridiculous. That made him cool when I was like 4. That was amazing. These days it's a little bit like, oh, what was I thinking? But I still love Grimlock, so what can I say?
Sludge. It's all about sludge.
Well, I think it's kind of an interesting thing just in all the fandoms, not just Transformers, of how you look at things as a kid versus how you look at things as an adult. And a lot of the issues that people have, like in Star Wars now, where if you had seen episode one as a kid, you probably really liked it. You thought Jar Jar Binks was, you know, funny and whatever. Whereas when you're seeing it as an adult, you're like, this is garbage. I hate this. And so I think that, you know, now everyone has a video on YouTube explaining how the new Star Wars movies are horrible. Right. But they're looking at it as through a lens of a 30 or 40 year old rather than just some kid that just saw a really cool, you know, fun movie with, you know, these new characters like Daisy Ridley and all that.
I want to put out there, unpopular opinion, as a kid, totally loved Wheelie. Totally liked him. People think of him as such an annoying character. He's kind of like our Jar Jar Binks in a lot of ways.
He was fingernails on a chalkboard for me. Every time he came on the screen, I'm like, I loved his toy. Hated the character.
No, he was cute and he rhymed and he was weird. For some reason, that really resonated to child me.
What do you think, in your professional opinion, is the most, outside of Optimus Prime, who is probably one of the most obvious choices, but who do you think is the most relatable Transformers character?
Relatable. That's tricky because, so I'm going to use this to segue a little bit in a minute, but what's tricky about that is that what's unique about this fandom is that, if you think about it, if you follow a show that's been on TV, like, okay, let's say you're a Garfield fan, right? So let's say you're a fan of Garfield and you've been following Garfield for all these years. Garfield of today is a lazy, lasagna-loving, mean cat man. Garfield of the 1980s was a lazy, lasagna-loving, mean cat man, right? Exactly the same character. Whereas the characters that we have from Transformers, the Rodimus that you were talking about from G1 is not the same as the Rodimus that lots of people really like from the comics, right? People have really gotten attached to his character over the years. He's gotten a lot more character development, and it's a slightly different version of the character. So it's difficult to say, because from like a G1 perspective, I would say, I'm going to say Bumblebee, because that was my like child attachment, because he was the kid appeal character. He was the character that was shown having really good relationships with humans and young humans. He was shown being energetic and overcoming problems and all those things. So I'd say they made him relatable.
Like the little engine that could.
Exactly. You were rooting for him. And then I saw, as I was watching Beast Wars as a preteen, I suppose, angsty, angry preteen, being mad that they were animals now instead of cars. I remember complaining about that for hours. lots of us did. I remember Cheetor being kind of pushed as, you know, he's yellow and he's younger and he's featured quite frequently, kind of as the new kid appeal character. And I hated him. I thought he was awful. I related better to Rattrap. So I would say that it's really going to depend on your generation. You know, if you were a kid when the kid appeal character was being pushed at you, you probably really attached to them. Otherwise, you probably really attached to whoever the, you know, the current Optimus Prime type character was, who was a relatable, likable guy. What I was surprised by was the number of people in the panel and that I've talked to since then, since I've continued talking about this topic, saying that the character they related to best was Starscream. Because, I mean, I'll say Starscream was a really fun character. He was amusing. And anybody who doesn't love that voice didn't grow up when we did. But he's not very redeemable. You know, he's not the nicest person in the world. And he kind of succeeds almost never. So it's really hard to say that I can relate to him. But many people said that they did. They were like, oh, I love Starscream. I totally relate to that guy.
Well, if you really think about it, though, Starscream was a little more competent than Megatron in some aspects. Because how many times did he actually point out, Megatron, your plan is really stupid. This is not going to work. And what happened? It didn't work. You know, Starscream had the foresight to see that. Megatron did not. Yet he's the leader of the Decepticons. Yes, Starscream should have been the leader of the Decepticons. Just going
to
put that out.
Somebody else relates to Starscream here.
Not really. He was one of those characters. I was entertained by him. I thought he was funny, but I didn't really care for him as a kid. He was one of those. It's like I would chuckle at him, chuckle at the jokes, but he was more annoying to me than anything else. I like the characters that typically were more sure of themselves, not necessarily, you know, vain, but they didn't rely on other people to be, for their own success. You know, they didn't try to overtake, you know, like Starscream was always trying to usurp Megatron to be successful. You know, I like the ones that, you know, I'm trying to think of a really prime example right now. Maybe, you know, Cup. You know, he was old. He knew what he was doing. You know, he knew his place in life. He, you know, what he did and how he lived his life was not dependent on other Autobots. You know, he was within himself. He didn't need those other people, but he was there. He always had sage advice. I like that kind of character. Those are the kind of characters I resonated with the most. Not the ones that were always out for themselves. You know, Cup was not about himself. He was very selfless. But he didn't actually go out of his way a lot either. You know.
Talk about a good father figure character.
Yeah.
That's one.
And then there's Ultra Magnus. You know, he was stoic to an extent. You know, other Autobots would joke with him, and yet he'd stand there all straight-faced. But yet, he was a leader figure, but less so than Optimus. You know, he had that dynamic. It's like, he's almost got the Optimus dynamic, but not quite. And I never could really put my finger on it.
Yeah, the feature that he didn't want to be a leader.
Yeah.
That maybe he could be. Maybe he had a lot of experience, but he didn't really want to do it.
He was a reluctant leader, and it's ironic that Rodimus Prime became leader, and he was even more of a reluctant leader. They were playing hot potato with the Matrix because nobody wanted it. I don't want it. You want it. You take it. I don't want
it
either.
That's for sure. So I was going to say, that's interesting to me just with going back to talking about, you know, having relationships with the villains, for instance. You know, maybe the reason I get so excited when I got MP36 was because I had this, like, relationship with Megatron throughout my life or something like that. Who knows? But isn't it interesting how I could say that I really like Starscream, or I really like Megatron, or I really like Beast Wars Megatron, because all those are pretty cool characters that I like quite a bit. But honestly, my relationship with them, if I had the ability to sit down in a room and hang out with G1 Megatron, I would probably avoid it, right? He's not really the kind of guy I would want to have coffee with. Have coffee with Bumblebee? Sure. Have coffee with Optimus? Sure. But have coffee with Starscream? Probably going to be poison coffee. So it's really interesting that we can have relationships with bad guy characters.
But I was going to say, I think that it's kind of interesting. Transformers is really one of the few properties where you do have relationships with the bad guys, and that a lot of people actually prefer, you know, those bad guys over the good guys.
Yeah, one of the reasons I avoided Transformers Animated when it first came out is I was told that it was kind of a villain of the week type thing, where they were rotating the Decepticons out, you know, more in short. You know, somebody shows up for one episode, does bad stuff, gets blown up, and that's it, type of thing. And that just didn't appeal to me.
You would hate Gal Gygar.
I think I watched a little bit of it, and I think I did.
Because that's the way that show pretty much started out, Villain of the Week. You know, it's funny how you mentioned relating to bad guy characters. Let's talk about characters, the bad guy characters that actually had some redeeming qualities. Octane, for one. You know, he had a friend that was an Autobot. What? That was a weird dynamic. You know, how could Octane, a Decepticon, and Sandstorm, an Autobot, possibly be friends? You know, there was a lesson there, whether or not kids realized it or not. You know, you can get along with somebody that you don't like, or they may have qualities that you don't like. You can get along with them still and actually coexist. And then what about the redemption of Blitzwing, as it were? How many think about Blitzwing? You know, he's one of those that you don't really think about until the end. He's like, throughout season two, he was you couldn't stand Blitzwing because he was a bad guy. But then at, you know, in Five Faces of Darkness, he had that little thing, you know, maybe this isn't quite what I should be doing.
Well, he had eyes on the greater good in that case. He wanted to, you know, not have the Quintessons throw the switch or whatever. So he was looking out for everybody, not just selfish desires of Galvatron seeking the, what was it, Decepticon Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it's funny that an evil character would put others above self. You know, it makes you realize, hey, there are 11. And it goes to say how many times it's actually been said within this fandom how there's no character development within Transformers Generation 1. You know, it was just, you know, a 30-minute or a 24-minute toy commercial. You know, here's these characters. They, you know, they might be on the screen for 15 seconds throughout the entire series, but yet then there are still characters in Generation 1, regardless of whether or not they were on the scene or on the screen for 5 minutes or, you know, 5 seconds. You know, Blitzwing is one of those that had layers of character. You know, you didn't realize that a character so evil could have the ability to put others above self. It makes you think. It was one of those things that as a kid, you saw this and you're like, his actions confuse me. And it makes you think about it long after the episode's done. You know, what aspect is that in a relationship is whenever you realize somebody has layers? Is there like a term for that, or?
Well, it's getting to know them as more than just their stereotypes. So it's like, you know, we refer to it as individuating characteristics of a person in psychology. So, you know, you may think of Blitzwing as the stereotypical bad guy Decepticon, but personally, I was going to mention the episode where he kidnaps a football coach and builds his entire plan of destruction off of football tactics. That was really goofy, right? That was really relatable.
And it has one of the most violent sounding lines that you hear in all of Transformers. It's like, tell me what's on your mind, human, or I will splatter it on the wall and see for myself.
Love it.
That line just absolutely hit me like a ton of bricks as a kid. I'm like, wow. Even as a kid, I knew that was out there. That was hardcore.
Yeah, but you got to know more about his character, right? That he was angry, but he was also like creative enough to look for new solutions and maybe even somewhat interested in human culture, like secretly. All those things like made him more than just another angry robot man who happens to turn into a tank and seem more angry and more robot and less man. But you get to know more of him as a person. And, you know, even though each character probably got, you know, one or two episodes that let you do that, whenever you do that, you start to know them better and you start to develop more of a relationship. One thing I should say is, like, I seriously doubt any of us have, like, what would be considered parasocial relationships with all of the cast of G1. Because a lot of them were kind of like, you know, that guy in the corner. I don't really care what he did.
He's an animation error.
Sunstorm, yeah, there
were
so many.
Acid Storm.
I was just like, I could use Grapple. And then I thought, did he ever actually show up in an episode? I don't really remember if he did or not. because I really don't remember.
The Master Builders.
The Master Builders is another great example of Autobots and Decepticons hanging out to come up, you know, to achieve a greater goal. You know, they built the solar power tower thingy together.
Although the Constructicons were doing it,
they had
with ulterior motives. Yeah,
absolutely. But they did hang out.
And it was actually cool. It's one of the things that made that episode cool, because you saw people that shouldn't be hanging together, and they were actually succeeding. You know, and it made you think, hey, they could actually turn sides. You know, that would be a cool notion. You know, but we knew in the end that was not to be.
Yeah, in 23 minutes, you only have so much. Everyone's got to go back to where they started.
Lucas, do you have a comment?
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, the great thing about IDW is just the characterization that they can put into it compared to the show. And you had mentioned about it, you know, can only fit it into 23 minutes. But, you know, with these comics that they've been going on for 13 years. And so I almost feel like I have more relationships with a lot of the More Than Meets the Eye characters than I do with original G1, just because I've been reading these comics now for longer than I had, you know, been watching the show originally.
That is an excellent way to segue to the last thing I wanted to discuss from all this, which is a form of kind of, I don't know, like pseudo-death, is the idea of taking one of your favorite characters and redefining them. So making it a new person. That's something that's kind of unique, as I said earlier, to Transformers, that, you know, I really liked Bumblebee growing up. Bumblebee was used as a name for the stupid car man and pees on people in the movies that I really don't like. But some people say, you know, it's the same character. He also has a comic identity that is closer, you know, from the IDW comics, that is closer to his G1 persona, but still a lot more fleshed out. He shows symptoms of actually being affected by the things that he did, by the fact that he was in a war and all those things, making him more of a fleshed out character. So the thing to ask is it the same person? Is it the same relationship? You know, does my relationship, I'm just now starting to read through Robots in Disguise. So I'm starting to get, you know, exposed to Bumblebee as ruler of Cybertron. Am I just picking up my relationship from 30 years ago that I have with the cartoon character and applying it to this guy, or am I starting a new one entirely? I find that to be a really interesting, you know, I suppose, philosophical, psychological question.
You know, and it's interesting how, you know, even in Generation 1, you had characters that were different from one medium to the other. And I'll use Grimlock as an example of that. Mm-hmm. In the cartoon, you know, he was probably the smartest Dinobot, but he was still very dumb. Yet in the comics, it was stated that the Dinobots were actually, especially Grimlock, were actually smart, but yet their voice, I guess Shockwave did something to their voice to make them sound stupid. You know, he had basically a speech impediment. So then he was actually, you know, king of the Autobots, you know, crowned himself king. You wouldn't have saw him do that. Yeah, he did have a inferiority complex with Optimus Prime in the cartoon, but I don't think he ever actually wanted to be leader of the Autobots overall. You know, he just had an inferiority complex. I think there's a big difference in that. And as such, whenever I read the comics, the Marvel comics in the 80s, I didn't relate to Grimlock as much as I did, or at least in the same way as I did whenever I watched the cartoon. And it was a weird dynamic for me.
Yeah, because you kind of feel like you're supposed to relate to that character again, because it's, you know, the same guy, but then it's not the same guy at all.
For me, with Grimlock, that's a great example. Like, cartoon Grimlock was pretty one-dimensional. I mean, there was the jealousy thing. You know, Grimlock liked to remind Optimus Prime, you know, we're coming in to save you again, guys, and, you know, moving on. But in the comics, Grimlock ran the gamut. He was like a despicable leader, horrible leader, you know, when he was king of the Autobots or whatever. And then, you know, he and Blaster had that fight, and then Grimlock kind of, you know, the underbase powered Starscream killed him. And then when he came back from that, like, he was kind of redeemed and better, and well, Furman had taken over as writer at that point. So he was a smarter, different, more mature. He had developed as a character, Grimlock. So he was completely different from cartoon, you know, me, Grimlock. But he was still Grimlock. Comic book Grimlock was really, he resonated with me a lot more than cartoon Grimlock. And I love what they've done with him in the IDW stuff. And then again, he's all over the place character-wise.
And there's a reason why Grimlock has become a, I guess, a core top-tier character for Hasbro. You know, he has so many different versions of him out there. There's somebody loves him. And what's not to like about a giant robot T-Rex from outer space? You know? So, sorry if I interrupted you there.
I think it's super interesting just to think about the fact that these are characters that we can have these relationships with, but then we get another version of the character and it's like, what the heck is this? And, you know, you gave one example of it actually worked out because you liked that Grimlock better. And you gave an example where it was like, it's a different guy and I don't really know if I like this guy as much. So that's really interesting. At my panel, I brought up the way that RC is treated in the IDW comics as a completely different personality from the one that we were shown in G1. And, you know, personally, growing up back then, she was the only female Transformer I had to relate to. So I kind of clung to her a little bit. But then I find this new version at IDW, and I can't relate to a character like that at all. Like, she's in no way similar to what I would want to be when I grow up, if I was a child again. Now, there's been better characters introduced that I can relate to a lot better. You know, there's actually scientists among the Autobots in the comics, which is cool. They actually get fleshed out as not warriors. But changing that character who was, you know, as I said in my panel, reasonably portrayed as an independent woman for an 80s action movie, reasonably, and definitely getting worse in the Japanese cartoons after season 3. But taking that character and changing her entirely to this kind of cold-hearted killer type character, that, you know, it's hard for me to say that's the same person. People might say, you know, this is still G1 RC. You can say that RC from Transformers Prime is a different person entirely, but this is the same person. She's pink.
they may look the same, but they're not the same. It's like,
not at all.
Like Spock and Mirror Universe Spock. You know, they may look the same, but they're not.
Right. So it's
you just need to get introduced to Nautica in the comics.
I already like Nautica. I've already like read things ahead about her because I thought, ooh, that's the kind of character I could relate to, and I'm excited to see her. I already have her toy, so I don't have to go buy it when I find her in the comics. That's good. I was prepared.
I really wish I could. I'd kept up with the comics. You know, I started out doing the Regeneration 1, and I never finished it. I guess it's because my proximity to a comic shop and being able to get to it on a regular basis. I'm not one of those types that likes to download a comic, you know, and read the e-version of one. I like to actually have the comic in my hand. And, you know, I don't get to a comic book shop enough to pick one up. And so I just never really follow the comics. But yet, so for so many years, it drove the Generations line. Essentially, it drove the Transformers toy line. You can't help but, you can't ignore the impact the comics and the characters therein have had upon this franchise. There for a short while between the end of the Generation 1 cartoon and the adventures of from the cybernetic space cube, it was carried by the Marvel comics. The whole Underbase saga, I think, is whenever it really became the media for Transformers for a while. And it was like, well, it's on TV, but only in reruns. You've seen these episodes a million times. So if you want fresh Transformers content, you had to go to the Marvel Comics. And, you know, fortunately back then, you didn't necessarily have to go to a comic shop. I could go to the local grocery store, and it was on the magazine stand. I loved that. That was really cool then. So, character relationships, what else did you want to tell us about them?
I mean, I honestly wanted to extrapolate a little more from what I just asked is, if you have a strong attachment to a G1 character, you know, you mentioned, like, for instance, you mentioned that you like Weird Wolf, and I don't know, has he really got any coverage in the comics recently?
In the comics, I'm not sure. The media he had the most exposure was in the Japanese Headmasters cartoon, where he was, I guess, kind of a leader type role, you know, of the smaller Headmasters, but you know, he wasn't, I guess, a de facto leader.
Right.
In the U.S. Rebirth cartoon, Monzo had one line. Weird Wolf himself did not have any. And in the comics, I think he had some very short lines in, like, the Headmaster's comic and stuff. So he's really not really fleshed out unless you take the Japanese cartoon or his tech spec and just try to extrapolate a character from that. And it's sad that there's a lot of characters like that. He's, you know, he's just actually more the norm in all of Transformers. Yeah.
So the question I'll ask then is, if you had a favorite character and they've had a new version put on them, like I'm saying, you know, I like RC. So I actually, when I heard that she had, you know, a pretty decently big role in the IDW comics, I read everything about her. It was like, oh, I don't like her as much as I used to. Do you feel like you're supposed to go look for that character? Like you're supposed to like the new version? Like say you were one of the people who did like Rodimus Prime. So did you walk into the new version in the IDW comics saying, I should like this guy, this should be one of my favorites because I've had a relationship with him in the past and he was cool, so I should like him again? I know it's a complicated question, but it's the one I wanted to ask.
Go ahead, Peter.
Oh, sorry. If I could, with Hot Rod as an example, when Hot Rod was introduced in his, I believe, the Spotlight comic back in 2006 or 7, somewhere in there, that Hot Rod felt like Hot Rod from the movie. He was a risk taker. He was a daredevil. He did, you know, whatever he was going to do, and kind of bucked authority and just ran with it. And he's had, you know, pretty nice character arc throughout the IDW books, going into More Than Meets the Eye and Lost Light, and even like with Maximum Dinobots, he's had a pretty steady development throughout the entire thing. So when Hot Rod was introduced, when Hot Rod was introduced into the IDW universe, he felt like the original Hot Rod to me. And I was a Hot Rod fan too, and a Rodimus fan as a kid. So he felt like, you know, it was like a nice segue from who I knew into who he is now becoming or has become now that the books are ending. But yeah, so it's still him, but it's, I understand that it's a different version of him. So it felt familiar enough for me to latch onto him and follow him and want to, you know,
Not as much a departure as some other characters.
Exactly. Thank you. You summarized it nicely. Yes.
I do think in general, a lot of Transformers fans are more accommodating of differences in the character if it's, you know, a different cartoon or a different media and things like that. But I know there's a lot of backlash with the recent Transformers movie. And one of the things was where Optimus was evil and that he had some things where he wasn't altruistic. And so people really were upset about that because they're like, wait a minute, this is my Optimus Prime. He, you know, he's not supposed to be, you know, have evil motivations or whatever. He's supposed to be, you know, all good. And so, and even that they have a little bit of that in the comics as well. And so, you know, I think that we do have a few of those kinds of characters where you're like, wait a minute, this is too far left or, you know, whatever. We need to get back to what this character really, really is.
An example of that is Bayverse Optimus Prime. We would have never imagined we'd hear Optimus Prime say, "Give me your face. I want to kill you all."
I'll kill you all. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. No.
That's not Optimus scenes. Prime. It's upsetting. I think that's one of the reasons why old time fans, and I hate using that term for us, but that's essentially what we are. It's hard for us to latch on to the Bayverse films, simply because we know what the characters, the base characters. It's okay if you change the look of the character a little bit, as long as they're recognizable. It's okay if you give them a little bit more fleshed out personality, you know, give them a little another depth. But don't change them so much that they no longer are the characters that we know. And to me, that's what they did with all of the movie characters, essentially.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Or you make a character that looks like another character and call him something completely different, like the Blitzwing Starscream thing on the new Bumblebee movie.
Mm. Don't even get me started on that.
That's so funny.
Or you name a character after a planet. Quintessa. It's like, I'm sorry, Quintessa is not a character. It's a planet. And it's gone. It went kaboom. But, you know, it's relating to a character. You know, if a character changes too much, you lose that relation to the character. Or is it possible to stick with that character and just change with it? Can your feelings change? Can a character change your feelings and change the way you think about something? Even if you cannot influence them in return in the relationship situation you were what was it parasocial relationship, you cannot influence them. They are a static character. But you are dynamic. They can influence you. How is that? Is that even possible? You know, for a static character to influence a dynamic person?
Yeah.
Or am I just going way out there?
No, not at all. Because we are affected by the social relationships we have. Right. We start to include people who are close to us, kind of in our definition of ourselves. You know, my relationship with my significant other is part of who I am. You know, anything that's kind of evolved with myself over the last 6 years being with him is a part of me, and it's a part of a change in me. And that's going to happen with any character that influences us or is important to us. We're going to learn lessons from them. Like, I think of one that I was actually going to complain about from his IDW treatment was Rat Trap. Because I really, like I said, I didn't relate to Cheetor at all in Beast Wars, but I love Rat Trap because he was kind of the goofy, wisecracking character who was super suspicious of everyone and paranoid, and he was fun. I liked him. And throughout the series, he had pretty good character development as far as, you know, he learned to not act as much on his prejudices. He learned to respect and like other people better. He had a lot of good character development. And when I saw him for the first time recently in the IDW comics, that's all reset, right? He feels like a worse person than he ever was at the beginning of Beast Wars. It was a bummer for me because it was like I learned with Rat Trap because I was pretty young at the time. You know, I was between 10 and 15 when that series was airing. So I get to have, you know, positive lessons from him of, oh, you're untrusting, but you should have been trusting and those type of things. And then I get hit with this new character who's way back there. And it's like, oh, no, you left for college. And you came back a worse person. I'm so sad. We can't be friends anymore.
But it is cool, though, that, you know, even fictional characters can change over time. You know, even me as a real life person, I know the person I am today is not the same person that I was 10 years ago. You know, I may look the same. I may sound the same. I may have some of the same interests and everything, but as a person, you know, the way I act, the way I respond to things is not the same way as I was 10 years ago. 10 years ago, I think I was a little more brash, a little more quick to respond to something in a negative way. Now I may take something and listen to it and let it churn a bit before I spit back a response. But I see that in fictional characters too. And whether it be a positive change or a negative change, you know, as long as you can still relate to that character, there's still that growth. But if, you know, going back to the movie thing, you know, if it, you know, you go from a stark, you know, this is Optimus Prime that we know, this is a Bayverse Prime, and you don't get that in between, you don't get to grow with that character, it just changes. You can't relate to that, can you? Or can you?
It's a lot harder because in real life, you get to develop, like you said, you get to develop alongside people. You know, people you know are changing with you. So it's like that. I think I'm not to pat my own back, but I think I made a pretty good analogy with the college thing. It's like when one of your friends goes off and you don't see them for 4 or 5 years and they've abruptly changed, you suddenly have to reevaluate entirely whether or not you want to be still friends with that person or whether or not you still want to like that character if they've changed after so many years. Because I mean, with the rat trap example, it's not like he had any fiction for the last bazillion years, ever how long it's been since Beast Machines ended. Don't get me started on Beast Machines. but he didn't have any characterization. He just kind of came back. He's a different guy. And it's like, I don't want to be friends anymore. Sorry, you're a jerk now. I don't like you. So that's interesting because if we had been through the same experiences together, if I had seen, you know, if instead there was a character arc that, you know, made him downtrodden for years and life was really rough on him and he ended up being a crony for Starscream and it felt more natural, then maybe I would not be as bothered by a quick change in the character. Maybe I would have seen what happened to him. I'd be like, well, he's been through a lot. He's not as nice as he used to be, but he's had a hard time.
Yeah.
Right? Just like you would with a real person if you knew them the whole time.
Yeah, viewer Techatron, you know, he says in the live chat, it's not the same Prime, of course, you know, going back to the Optimus Prime, you know, Movieverse Prime is not the same as, but, you know, it goes back to what you were saying earlier, you know, we have this preconceived notion of what Optimus Prime should be, and we go into the movies, and this is what we expect, you know, even though we go in knowing that it's not the same Optimus Prime, doesn't even look the same, the name Optimus Prime in our head, it, you know, we know what we want to expect from that person, from that character. And we're not getting that. So,
right.
You know, we are in essence trying to carry over Generation 1 Optimus Prime to the Movieverse Prime, and they're not the same, but we expect them to be.
An interesting thing is thinking about it. I actually got to buy a toy of movie Optimus Prime before the movie came out. So before I saw how he acted. And first movie Optimus Prime was not nearly as large of a departure as everything afterwards from original Optimus Prime. But when I got the toy home and I thought about, you know, who this is, I probably just thought of it as being Optimus Prime again, right? I didn't have a new character. I didn't have any media for the new version. So I just thought of him that way. So that's probably going to help change our predispositions because it's like, oh, I'm buying the IDW version of a character I like as a figure because I think it looks neat, but I know nothing about them. So I'm assigning the G1 personality that I know and love, just like I assigned that G1 Optimus. Heck, I even bought a Bumblebee figure before the movie came out. I got rid of it right after seeing the movie because I hated that character. However, and I even bought the Human Alliance Bumblebee, which I still have. And like every time I look at it, I get this like bittersweet feeling where it's like, this is a really cool toy, but oh, I hate this character so much. But it's interesting that we would assign the old character before we knew that they're a new person.
But I think with the movies that they're actually better off introducing new characters,
yes,
rather than going back to the old ones. And some of the favorite ones from the Bayverse are actually somewhat original to the movies, you know, guys like Barricade or Blackout and things like that.
Nitro Zeus.
Right. Or even the recent movie Cogman. and all that. It's like those are kind of some of my favorite characters, but they're not shoehorned into trying to make it like the G1 or trying to make it like an old one. And so, you know, I actually think they're better off just, you know, introducing new ones. I mean, I can still keep the core, you know, your Starscreams and your Optimus and Megatron and things like that. But, you know, I enjoy those more than I do, you know, the old ones.
Absolutely.
I agree with that.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say I agree with it. That's
all. You look like you had more to say there, though.
I always look like I have more to say. It's just it's a permanent feature. I talk a lot. But one thing I was thinking was that I think it actually works better now that we don't expect them to be the G1 characters anymore to use the old names. Like, I've actually liked Hound in the last two movies. He's actually been pretty cool, even though he's not G1 Hound at all. It probably helps who does his voice and the fact that I grew up with him as well. But I'm more comfortable with it being a new character because I already know to expect that than I was when I was just waylaid with Bumblebee peeing on a guy the first time he shows up in the movies. I was surprised, but now I know to expect. You know, Hound's different, but he's still kind of a cool character.
Absolutely.
I may be trying to justify that I got one of his figures recently, but you know,
I'm kind of on the fence with him. I like his character. I like his characterization, and like you said, I like the voice actor, you know, John Goodman. But I don't like his character design in the movie. I don't like it, and it's weird because in Generation One there were characters that had mustaches and beards, but I don't like it in the movie. It just looks weird, out of place to me. But their Transformers have always had it. You know, it's like Alpha Trion had a mustache and a beard. You know, Scourge had a mustache and a beard. You know, what's wrong with that? But yet Hound has this big, bushy looking beard, and it bothers the crap out of me. I don't know why. And why do Transformers need to smoke a stogie? Makes no sense to me. Why? You know, and it's one of the things that I bugs the crap out of me about the IDW incarnation of Cup. You know, and a lot of people's like, oh, he's not Cup unless he's got a Saigar. And I'm like, why does he need one? Transformers don't smoke unless they have a smokestack on the back of their cab. know, it's like...
I feel the same way about Cup.
Yeah, I just don't like it. I mean, it's like, okay, I can get it if he's gnawing on a bolt, you know, maybe that's his little tick or something. He chews on a bolt. Okay. But smoking a cigar. No, that's, it bothers me. I'm just weird that way.
I wonder if,
go ahead,
for the facial hair thing, I wonder if it's because the G1 robots had robot facial hair. Like it was geometrical figures. Basically it was like, oh, you have a goatee, you have a triangle maybe from your chin, and it's made of metal. Whereas with these new characters in the new movies, they make it actual hair, right? They make it like tendrils or like wires. Hair, yeah. It looks kind of gross, honestly. Mm-hmm. Instead of just looking like a fun sculpture on their face, it looks like this gross thing hanging off of their face because they always look dirty because they're wires
what
instead
was that
of actual hair.
Little character that they in the Bayverse movies, the little guy that had like the wiry hairy, it was made out of fiber.
Brains.
Had the it was fiber optic cable basically just sticking out of his head. It's like, it just looks weird.
It did look kind of weird.
I think we've had some great discussion on this topic. Do you guys have any closing thoughts on what we've talked about tonight? Or any comments?
I was going to let you all go first, since I'm the guest here.
Peter, you look like you're getting ready to say something.
I'm always ready to say something. I don't know. Let's
speak
characters, up. Okay. These characters across the board for pretty much my entire life have been there for me in one iteration or another. Some of them I take umbrage with, like some of this Bayverse stuff, and some of them I really, 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 really love, like the current IDW incarnations of a number of characters. So, yeah, parasocial relationships, I'm all about it. It's awesome.
Something that you never really, I never really considered until somebody actually mentioned hearing and seeing this panel. I'm like, hey, that's actually kind of neat. Of all the BotCons and all the TF cons that I've been to, I've never seen a panel like this, and I'd like to see it again, honestly. Lucas, you have a closing thought or comment?
Well, I think I'm just really happy that there's something that I really enjoyed as a kid that I can also enjoy as an adult, and that there's this entire community around me that I can enjoy that with. And I think that that's something that, you know, just having the Facebook groups and podcasts and, you know, message boards and all those types of things is just really kind of, you know, my, I feel like my love of Transformers is more now than what I had when I was younger. And so some of those things you mentioned, like, you know, He-Man or even, you know, Voltron or just whatever the different cartoons you watched as a kid, that as an adult, I could care less personally about He-Man, but it's because I don't have that same community that I do, you know, with Transformers. And so I'm just loving it. And, you know, I look to keep on going on and, you know, sharing it with my kids and other people.
Absolutely.
So in trying to make a closing statement, I have about 6 closing statements. That's fine. I'm going to pull out a few of them. First thing I wanted to say is just, I think it's cool that I can talk about this stuff and kind of reassure people that having kind of this, like, feeling like a personal connection to your favorite cartoon characters from childhood isn't unusual. It's actually something, the research on parasocial relationships has not been done with Transformers. So I don't want anyone to walk out and say there's also research studies about relationships with Transformers, because it's done with TV characters. So as people say, like, my favorite TV character is House, and how important of an impact he has on me as a person as he goes through his 9 or 11 or whatever seasons of House that there were. And it's interesting for me to be able to tell people, well, actually, we do the same things with our toy cartoon characters. And it's just a human thing that we do. We have relationships with characters that we can't touch or feel, but we can definitely connect to and learn about.
Whether you consciously admit it or not, or even realize it.
Yeah, you may not realize it until you think about it. Then you're like, oh, yeah, I'm really invested in that guy, and he's going to blow up next week, and that sucks. So that was one thought. Another thing I wanted to say, and probably before I make my last statement, is that I just want everybody to know that if you're interested in this research or this literature, you know, look it up. Look up parasocial relationships and read about it. Don't take anything I've said as gospel, because I'm talking as a fan, not as an academic today. I happen to have the background, but, you know, this is me wanting to nerd out about my favorite toy people for a while. So definitely, if you want to learn more about this stuff, look it up and don't take this as, you know, professor gospel doing this. Yes. It's not an academic talk. It's just for funsies. But the last thing I wanted to say, and this is coming from my academic nature, is a question I've been really interested in, and one that, yeah, hopefully someday I'll get a student who wants to research these type of things, because, you know, most of them I tell that I'm interested in fan behavior, and they're like, let's go back to studying prejudice like we always do, because that's more interesting. But one thing I'm really interested in is, if we actually connect directly to the toys in the way that we might connect to remembering experiences with characters or people. So, like, there's one theory that suggests that, like, if you look back at an old email or old pictures of a friend, that it reminds you of your interactions with them. Well, maybe if I say have, like, a really big connection to, like, say Art Fire, and I grab my Art Fire figure and I look at him, does that actually give me that, like, boost? I don't know how I've grown to find literature on Art Fire, because he's had, like, no characterization, but he happens to be what's here. But does it actually give me that boost? Like, does just looking at the figure, not having to look at, like, old comic books or stories or anything, does that actually make me feel better, because it's like having this person? And does that actually, you know, as opposed to other collectors who collect things that aren't people, like stamps or coins or
a physical representation of something that you connect to.
Right. This is a humanoid. This is a person. It has a face on it. So does that actually let me connect to it more then people would connect to their other collectibles that are just, you know, you collect rocks and rocks are rocks. Although I collect rock orbs, so I guess that's kind of the same thing. They have faces. Yeah. I'd really be interested in learning about that someday. Maybe someone will do that research. Maybe someone will listen to this podcast and do that research.
Absolutely. It's like, why do we even collect? You know, why do we want toys? You know, and part of it, you know, we've talked about this before on the podcast. You know, this podcast is almost 9 years old, 10 years old. You know, in all the casts that we've had and shows that we've had, we've touched on it before. We've had entire episodes dedicated to it. You know, why do we collect? And it's something that we'll come back to again. You know, it's one of those cyclic, you know, discussions, you know, different viewpoints, different people, talking about, you know, whys and hows of things. You know, I think the last time we talked about why do we collect toys, you know, I think the prevailing was they're cool because they're cool. They're interesting. And the number three, I relate to the character. It gives me a representation, a physical representation of a particular character, and I want that particular character to be represented in a physical form, not just in my head and on the television or in the comic book. And it's interesting how we get to that point, how we want that. And there's also a divide between wanting it and needing that. You know, do I really need Fireflight and Sky and Air Raid? You know, I want them, but do I need them? No, I don't need them. But I also don't need Ramjet. I don't need Snapdragon. I don't need them. I don't need any of them, but I want them. And there's that dynamic to it. Well, I think we've had, again, some great discussion today and some interesting. It's been fun. Really want to welcome you guys new to the show, and Anna, you know, you're welcome to stick around too as a permanent member. We're always looking for new members. You know, I know everybody can't be on every week, and that's part of the reason that that we've got new members and new faces on the show. You know, we're always changing. You know, we started out myself and Sane Galvatron. That's me, Ryu, Mirai Baby, Guard Convoy. We had an entirely different cast, and we've changed throughout the years. And it's not because, you know, it's people time, their time availability changes. You know, my availability changes. We used to broadcast on Tuesdays and Friday nights. Can't do that anymore because of my work. So we do it on Saturdays, or on days that are, that we can get available. And it's, you know, the cast changes, you know, and it's always good to have fresh new voices and new opinions on things. That way we can revisit topics, and somebody new on the show may give a different perspective on an old thought that maybe you hadn't quite considered. And that's part of what we do here at TFYLP. We want to entertain, we want to inform and be a part, a productive part of this fandom. And help it grow. And, you know, even though we're primarily an adult-centered show, you know, if you're a teenager or a young Transformers fan just getting into it, I really hope that you like, subscribe, and share to this podcast, be it the audio version or the video version here on YouTube. Okay, so apparently YouTube cut the video off about 30 seconds too early. So obviously, this episode ended rather abruptly on air, but you didn't really miss anything. I'm just wrapping up the show. So, without further ado, we will see you next time on TFYLP. Good night, everybody.
This has been Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, a presentation of TFTalk.net. We'd like to thank you for listening and ask that you please rate us on your favorite podcast outlet and share us with your friends. be sure to follow us on Twitter at TFYLP. Email us at podcast@tfylp.com. This is Paul Lighting, and on behalf of TFYLP, we'd like to thank you again for listening. And we hope you'll join us next time for another TFYLP.